Oh, that's right. 4:07 in the afternoon, back again. Hey, I hope you caught that interview this morning we did with Congressman Clyburn on his book, Blessed Experiences. It was a good one. We'll have it posted on the web. If you missed it, you'll be able to catch it on WCRS. That's 1450am.net. But it was a lot of fun to do, and I sure appreciate him stopping by our studios today. And then he went over to the Mays Center over there, the Mays House at the Gleams campus, and did a book signing. So I know he had a busy day, and we appreciate him coming here to Greenwood. But now we're off and running on some more political stuff here this afternoon. And right now we have Don Jordan, who is with us. He is Dr. Don Jordan. He is running for Superintendent of Education. I feel like I'm an education expert, Don. I've talked to so many people about this. How are you doing today?
I have no complaints. It's been a beautiful day, and it was a beautiful drive here.
Yeah, it is a nice drive up from Columbia. Now, what do you do right now?
Right now, today, I taught a course to teachers at 1140, elementary teachers, and at 8:30 this morning at USC, I taught a calculus class to about 30 students. And that's what I do at USC. I've taught 25 different courses, 3 computer languages, and I've been there 41 years. I started early.
You started early, I guess so. And I guess with all this going on in your life, why would you want to be Superintendent of Education for the great state of South Carolina?
This is the reason. I have 100 calculus students in the spring semester, and I could have done this in the fall also. Of that 100, 60 were in serious debt. They're in debt from $20,000 to $80,000. And these are facts. We know that. The public knows that. Legislature knows it. So I'm looking at my students, and I'm looking out at them, and I'm saying, here we are. We're going to leave our students with a national debt, and there's no plan about that. I'm also an environmentalist, and I don't like the landfills, just throwing everything in there. So we're leaving with all these landfills. It's going to cause a problem. And now a personal debt. And that's where I'm going to leave the comfort zone and try to step out and do one thing for South Carolina and maybe the nation, and that is to stop tuition increases. We must do that. If it continues to double like it did in the last 10 years, I believe in the next 10 years it'll be unaffordable for only the elite will be able to go to college.
Now, but as far as Superintendent of Education, are you really over colleges, or is it more K through 12th grade?
It's more K through 12, but here's the angle. You also serve on the Commissioner of Higher Education. You also have a board that you actually work for. Mm-hmm. And you also have the Oversight Committee, which is great because they look at you and see what you're doing right. Mm-hmm. And you have the governor, and you have the legislature. So you got, you know, your voice is heard. All over. And of course, stopping tuition isn't the only item. Our teachers are not respected enough. We do not want
to. Well, I think we could use the word lack. Lack of a lot of respect for a lot of teachers.
Exactly. And, you know, and teachers over the state know that I care about them. I've worked with them for a long time. I teach teachers online at USC using Adobe Connect out of my office, believe it or not. And it's a very valuable tool to have. But teachers don't want to be graded A, B, C, and D. You know, I don't want to be a B-plus professor, and I'm not going to hire a C-plus lawyer. So,
well, there's an idea for you.
We don't want to do that. We don't want to tie evaluations to test scores. That's not a fair thing to do. We want an appeal process that starts at the school level and continues to the district level to avoid litigation by any teacher. And also, we want the teacher involved in the process of writing the guidelines. And that means that they will get together with the administration at their local school and some district officials, and they'll write the guidelines. And they'll go back and forth until they get them. And a committee will be formed to evaluate teachers, which will consist of teachers elected and appointed, administrators appointed, and that group will evaluate the teachers, and they will have classroom visits. This works, and that will give the teachers some input into how they're evaluated. And that seems the most reasonable way to do it for me. And, you know, not just tie on numbers and get some fancy statistics in there. We have to have classroom visits to evaluate teachers. And the ultimate goal is to make them a better teacher and then praise them for what they're doing good.
Well, and so I think one of the big issues that I've heard throughout this is the discipline aspect. I think part of our respect and with our teachers has to do some with the ability to discipline within the class without fear that somebody's going to come back and sue you.
Well, that is a problem, and you have to be a seasoned and a strong teacher to get that done. You have to have rules in your class that you're going to stand by, and you have to have the principal back you up on those rules. You can't have a principal, you know, being too easy on it, and you got to have parents that back you up. If you can get those three things, if you can get strong rules, a principal backing you, and the parents backing you, you can have discipline. But that must be the first three priorities.
Then why don't we have that in the schools?
Well, you know, you can be in a classroom situation where it's very difficult. You can have your rules, and you send a student to the principal, and the principal sides with the parent, not the teacher. And that's just a no-no. You can't do that. And so that breaks down the system, and that happens a lot. Some teachers do not have rules set up, and they are not strong enough in the classroom to enforce those rules, and that has to be done too.
Well, I think, but I also think on the flip side, we have a lot of student. I mean, you know, we think about the way school was when you were growing up or I was growing up. You wouldn't think about acting out.
Well, no, but you know, we had our problems. You know, everything wasn't perfect when I was going to school.
My teacher had a ruler.
And
get whacked across the knuckles if you weren't paying attention or doing right.
Well, my mother came to school and told him to whip me, so it was okay. It never hurt. You know, it hurt, but it never hurt me in the long run.
Damage your psyche, did it?
It turned me around.
Turned you around?
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. But those are some of the things that I think those are some of the issues. Of course, there's a lot of issues that we're going to be talking about here today. I did want to mention, Don, what a stellar background you have for science and everything, and you've received the Order of the Silver Crescent, the highest award for dedication, commitment, and leadership an individual can receive in the state. That is, congratulations for that.
Well, thank you very much. I owe it to a lot more than just me. There were a lot of people involved in what I did, and they helped me. I had a lot of volunteers helping me with the Middle School Academy of Science, which I established in South Carolina.
Correct. You've done a lot of good things here in South Carolina, and we're going to talk more about what he's done. We're also going to talk more about his vision should he become superintendent of education. I am here with Don Jordan. Hey, don't you go away. It's time for us to hear a quick word from our sponsors, and we'll be right back. Gold, gold, more precious than any other time in history. Do you have gold? Do you need cash? Then bring it to SFG. That's Sharp Facets Gallery, 1220 Bypass 72, Greenwood. Telephone 229-6613. Don't forget, we buy diamonds too. Paying the highest prices for your gold and diamonds at Sharp Facets Gallery. Oh, that's right. We're right back here, Sharp Facets Gallery. We are talking to Don M. Jordan, and he is a professor at the College of Arts and Science. He's at the Center for Science Education. He's a winner of the Distinguished Researcher and Scholarship Award by the college for 1996. He's down there at USC. In fact, he was teaching this morning, and now he's up here in Greenwood this afternoon. I'll bet you are looking forward to next Tuesday.
Oh,
the
yeah.
Primary, yes.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yes. I don't have any plans for, a big celebration. My daughter got married in my side yard on Hayward Street in Shandon, so I'm going to put my rickshaw out there and a couple of signs and a tent, and it won't cost me anything.
Sounds good. But you want to be the next superintendent of education. You know, one of the questions that has been, I think, a hot topic issue is how the dollars should go. Do you believe, number one, that public education should get all the dollars, or are you in the camp that believes the dollars should follow the child? Now, we're talking K through 12th grade. What is your feeling?
I think the dollar should follow the child. And my motto is this, for the entire campaign, if it benefits a student, then let's do it. I got that motto from a previous president of the University of South Carolina when I was a student. It was Tom Jones. He was an engineer. He and I were in several workshops together, and we got to know each other. And he was sitting out on the bench on the horseshoe one day, and I was sitting there beside him. And I said, Dr. Jones, I said, how do you accept students to Carolina? And he said, if it benefits the student, let them in. So I've adhered to that ever since. If it benefits the student, let's do it. And so in a lot of cases, a student should be able to have funds that follow them to private school, religious or not, to the charter schools, or wherever they need to go. And, you know, I think the competition is good for us. And, you know, you're supposed to have, in funding, you should have, the dollar should already be allocated by student population. So mm-hmm. if a student leaves this place and goes to that place, it's okay because you already got the dollar there.
Well, there's some of the opponents have said that they need to stay with the public schools for fear that the public schools will not be highly attended.
Well, I don't think that's ever going to happen because, you know, you got so many restrictions even if you got freedom of choice. The good schools are going to get a lot of people that want to go there, but they can only take so many. Mm-hmm. And so you got to think about having more than one choice. But, you know, even homeschoolers, you know, there are cases where they are best, it's in the best interest of the student to be homeschooled. I have no qualms with money following homeschoolers.
I agree. I think it should follow the schools, but that has been some of the questions. Now, what do you feel about as far as the amount of money that's spent in the schools? Do we need a bigger budget down there in Columbia? Do we need more money for the schools? What is your opinion?
For goodness sake, no. We do not need more money. What we need to do is examine what we have. And one of the things I'm going to do is I'm going to sit down with I'm going to go, if elected, lucky or unlucky, I am going to go to every single school district and talk with the superintendent and the chief financial officer. And we're going to come up with a plan. I'm also going to piggyback and hopefully work with directly what is called South Carolina JET, which is a consortium of about 15 school districts initiated over in Kershaw County by that chief financial officer that has already got a plan, already a bill in the legislature. And they've got a bill that makes the funding fair. And we, you know, it hasn't been accepted yet. And I think one reason is because they're asking it costs more money. So we got to get that clause out of there probably. But I think we can work with what we have. It may mean that we have less administrators, more teachers.
And, what a novel idea.
Well, you know, the administrators might not like that statement, but you don't want to be top heavy. Mm-hmm. If you're a superintendent of a district and you've got 15 principals, the principal runs the school. You do need a deputy, but you don't need four deputies. Mm-hmm. That's just my opinion.
Sure. Do you think that what our schools have in them is equitable? Do we feel that some schools don't have enough and some schools maybe you could even say have too much?
Yeah, they're not the technology at the schools, the schools themselves, they're not equal. And you know, there's been some effort to try to get more money into the poor districts, and I'm for that. But you know, I don't have a complete solution for how to make all that equal. Mm-hmm. But I can tell you this: you can take just an old timey schoolhouse. You put a good teacher in there, you're gonna get something done. And so it's the teacher that's gonna make things different. And you know, the evaluation process, we test too much. I mean, my wife teaches elementary school in Brennan, in Columbia, South Carolina. She's a PE teacher. And she's a wonderful teacher, and I envy her because every time we go to a mall or Goodwill or whatever, the students just sort of magnetize to her. They don't do that for me. They do it for her. So, you know, it's just that, you know, the school system, and her system is really good, but the school systems aren't, you know, you talk about giving everybody a computer, mm-hmm. and that's a good idea, but it doesn't teach them computer science. And we need to teach computer science in the fourth grade. I mean, with curriculum and engineering. If you're going to have students come out and meet the demands of the industry. So the industry does not have to outsource this. You want to start teaching computer science and engineering in the fourth grade as part of your curriculum. You got to tingle their toes. I started the Middle Elementary School Academy of Science for the South Carolina Academy of Science back in 1990. And the grades I worked with were 4 through 8, and we worked all over the state for that. And I can name a number of times that students have excelled from that program into high school. And it may not be due to just that. Certainly it involves a great student, usually. Mm-hmm. But the fourth grade is a place to turn them on.
What do you think about reading? You know, we have this big push for a third grade. If you're not reading on a third grade level, then we should hold them back, hold them over, hold whatever in order to get them on a reading level. What do you think about reading?
I'll get back to the reading, but a blanket rule that says that any third grader that doesn't meet X standard has got to stay back is not good. If it benefits the student, let's do it. But when we do that, let's involve the student, let's involve the administration, mm-hmm. let's involve the teachers, and let's involve the parent, and let those make that decision. And we can do encouragements, but holding a student back is sometimes very devastating. So you have to be real careful with that law. On the reading, I'm all for the reading programs, but I want to know who's going to be doing the teaching. I don't want a babysitter. I want a good curriculum. I want activity going on. I want it well-defined. And I want more than just literature reading, because you read technically a lot different than you read a novel. Mm-hmm. And I have to actually teach my students at USC how to read a math book.
Okay. All right. Well, I haven't heard that before. So you have to teach them how to read a math book? What does that mean?
It means this: you've got illustrative examples in your text, mm-hmm. and you buy them when you purchase the text. Well, if you sit there in front of that text and you leave that illustrative example solution open, your eyes are going to play tricks on you. You're going to go down and look at that. So what you're going to do, if you don't cover that up with a note card or a half sheet of paper, mm-hmm. your eyes are going to play. You have to sort of challenge yourself for a nanosecond or so before you start looking at the answers. Otherwise, what you tend to do is start to memorize. And then you memorize, and you wonder now why you can't do the activities later, and that's because you really didn't get down to the, and we're only talking about a little time.
Sure.
But this is the way you read a math book.
Hmm. Okay. All right. So, and what do you think, what is your position on, I think we've just passed fourth grade kindergarten,
mm-hmm.
four-year-old kindergarten. How soon should our kids be in school? I mean, some people say we ought to start them at birth, in school, in daycares and this type of thing. Where do you fall on that?
Well, I don't think all students need to start school in fourth grade.
Four years old.
I'm at K-4.
Right.
And I don't think it's a good idea to blanket that. I think in some schools, to have that availability is good. But kids need to be home with their parents. And you know, be in a home environment. And the school is not that home environment always. If the parents want to send them to, you know, our kids went to a Christian school, mm-hmm. when they were 4 years old. But it was a very, very short. It wasn't, you know, a public school. Now, that's fine. But it shouldn't be forced, and it shouldn't be uniformly done. It should be selective. And certainly some of the poorer districts, we need to work on that. But again, if you're going to have the program, you got to have good teachers in the program that have curriculum and know what's going on with it. You just can't be hired and spend more money.
Sure.
We don't need to do that.
Well, we are going to hear South Carolina Radio News. When we come back, I want to figure out how we get really good teachers, and we're going to ask Don Jordan about that. We're also going to be talking about Common Core, which, yes, it has been struck down here in South Carolina, and we're going to be talking about how to deal with these tuition increases. What would be some of the answers that he would have with that? Plus, I'm sure a lot more. So I want you to stay right with us. We are talking with Don Jordan. He is a professor here at USC, and he's very accomplished. I feel like I'm over my head here today, but we're going to have a good time talking to him anyway, so don't you go away. Hey, if you got a question, give us a call, 229-7984. That's 229-7984.
Do you know D. Stone?
Yes.
He and I are good friends. He just got elected to the board of Lander College.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Have you had him on?
I haven't had him on, but my husband, Jeff, actually started the DOSA program over at Lander, which is how Dee got involved to begin with. Yeah.
I thought Dee was a Greenville native. I'm not sure of that. I thought.
Greenwood?
I mean, Greenwood. Greenwood, yeah.
I don't know. I know he doesn't live here now. I don't know if he was.
I kept thinking he was. Oh, but he used to be president of the South Carolina Academy of Science. That's where I met him. He's the one who encouraged me to do the middle school program.
Yeah.
It goes that way back. Sometimes I say, I wish I'd never listened to him because I put a lot of hours in that. At one time, I had almost seven districts going simultaneously. And I don't call myself a lobbyist, but I was able to get enough information to the legislature that they gave me $100,000 a year to run the programs that I ran. And I did this, and I got a salary from USC, so I didn't want any salary. So everything, I didn't want any overhead either. I wanted everything to go to students. And so the academy and myself, we developed a lot of programs for that. In the recession, it was stopped, and it should have been because people were out of jobs. That was about 2008. But Dee got me started with this middle school thing. And I had seven districts going simultaneously. And during that interval that I had that money, Warren Gazay was a senator from Columbia. And my program was up to be killed. And so Warren called me on the phone, Dr. Gazay called me on the phone, and he said, I'm either coming to your office or you're coming to mine. Which one you want to do? I was in the plaza, and he was in the state house. So the Carolina Plaza, and he knew that. I said, I'm coming to your office. And he had all these papers down on his secretary was there, and he said, I want you to tell me what you're doing. So I sat down and told him what I was doing. And before I left, he said, take those papers up. We're funding Jordan. And it went right on. But it was because I wasn't looking for anything for myself. I was looking what we could do for students. And at that time, we had a real strong 4 through 8 program. For kids. I was doing workshops. I did them here in Greenwood at Tech with the teachers here. I did them at Erskine. I've done them even at the school in right down the road here. I can't think. Oh, what's Abbeville? Newberry, Sumter, South Carolina State. I had 1,400 in the Coker Center at one time. And we did them at Benedict College, Charleston. I had the president of, he's now the president of Francis Marion. He was my keynote speaker then. I had 900 in Satilla. We had a large drawing. It was very, very popular. It was a Saturday morning show, and we had, 30 sessions a kid could go to, and we had snails that crawled. And I got these from elementary teachers. A lot of these things, the snails would crawl. You could teach a snail to crawl across the line. And kids love that. Anything that would turn them on to science. And we always had a role model. And it was 4.5 hours and we were out of there. So parents loved it. They went with their kids, went to the sessions with their kids. And I was running 7 or 8 of those simultaneously. It was almost too much. And teaching full time. Then I was younger, I could handle it a little better. But, when the fun stopped, I couldn't keep up with it. And the university piled a bunch more work on me, too. I don't tell them I said that, but I chaired the committees and doing this, and sort of got me out of that role and back in it. But I'm still working with the middle school, and I have a contest that I do statewide, and it's gotten very popular. And we have a lot of students in the Greenwood area that participate in it and do very well. And I designed the contest so that no big school could dominate. In other words, I made it so that if you have an entry, you have a winner. And so if you got Irmo Middle, which is a huge school, they can't come in and dominate everything, And I'll get principals in small schools in South Carolina rural areas saying, my students never won anything statewide. And so, and what I do is, after the contest is designed to meet the standards. Takes a while to do it up. It's 4 pages. Now I can internet it out, so the cost has gone down a lot. But you will have a principal ask me, where's the contest this year? You know, have you got it ready yet? And that kind of stuff. So it's been rewarding to do that. And I can name you 7 or 8 students off the top of my head that have started in that contest in the fourth grade, and I follow them all. Sometimes I catch on to them. I just send them an email or something, or a little note, and I follow them through. And those students have won. John Corman at Wilson Hall, and he moved to Riverside, won everything in the world in, you know, environmental science. No, botany. He was a botany, because he was doing extracts on the walnut roots. And he did all. He's just in fact. And we're talking. What we're talking about here: a South Carolina student that was the best in the world in botany at the International Science Fair, competing against all the magnet schools all around the nation: Virginia, New York, California, the governor's school in South Carolina. This is big. This is the best. Taught here in the public schools in the state of South Carolina. We have great public schools. I can name you Ben Bartlett at Lexington High. I can name you the Van Shacks, both of them at Spring Valley High, both at Graham. And these are all students, high school students, competing on a national level, have won everything. I can go all over the state. I can talk about Stacy. South Carolina is a diverse society. You've got some of the best schools in the world.
Oh, that's right. We're right back here, Sharp Facets Gallery, this afternoon. And I am talking with Don Jordan. I tell you what, Don, you were just telling me about some of the science programs that you have designed in the contest and everything. And you were telling me about some of these students that are outstanding students in your science, the contest and whatnot, that are competing against all across the United States, mm-hmm. and are doing very, very well and winning. Now, I just don't understand, because South Carolina doesn't chart that well in all parts. What's the deal?
We have a diverse society here in the state of South Carolina. We have some of the best schools and some of the best teachers in any state. And I just, in the conversation before we came back on the air, I was telling you about John Corman at Wilson Hall, and he went to Riverside. And John did his research on the extracts of a walnut tree root. And he won everything at the International Science Fair in botany. Now it sounds like, he won everything. But he competed against all the students that were mentored all over the United States, all the magnet schools in New York, all the magnet schools in California and Virginia, the governor's schools. John Corman was the best in the world. And I can go on with Stacy Arberg at Hilton Head, or the Van Shacks at Spring Valley, or the jurors at Brooklyn Casey. And it just goes on and on and on. All these are the best.
Are those all the good schools in South Carolina?
Well, they all come from good schools. You're right.
Okay.
But they're also... most of these students were part of a program run by the South Carolina Academy of Science that I helped develop. And we got them in the fourth grade. Not all of them, but most of the names that I did, we did. And they were doing the MESA contest or for the mail-in contest or something of that nature. And we sort of watched them. And I got my eye on several right now that are, doing outstanding work. And I sort of stay in touch with them. I don't, the credit goes all to the student. I mean, they did all this themselves, not Don Jordan. I'm just a facilitator.
Well, there has to be something with, and we touched on this, I think, when we started, about you're talking about with your contest and your programs and everything, and in the fourth grade, you want to ignite their interest, dip their toes into the science or the technology or the engineering part of it. Society has changed. How kids learn has changed. We have to change up how we're teaching things. But how do we apply this to all aspects of teaching? And how do we get teachers excited about it? One of the things that I do believe is that if a child is not able to read in the third grade, that they lose interest very fast, because as they go to the fourth and the fifth and the sixth grade, then they develop problems and they can't compete.
That's true, and there's no pill you can take to make every student the best student in the world. And, you know, any student in the third grade that can't read, we definitely need to take a look at that. As I mentioned before, I don't think it should be mandatory, but I think it should be, you know, maybe projected and also encouraged. But a student in that category needs an adult. They need somebody to put their arm around them. And they need somebody who cares. And they need 10 pats for every kick. And you have to continue that all the way through school. You just can't sort of say, okay, well, they couldn't do that, and so just sort of leave them alone and not give them any more help.
Or just pass them on to the next grade need, for somebody else to deal
need,
with it.
They need serious attention all the way through and not forget them. You know, and as I said before, we have a diverse society in South Carolina. I've already mentioned some of the best schools and the students that have excelled over everything in our entire nation. So I know we have some of the best schools and the best teachers around. Yet we have the poor districts that need just as much help. I'm just as passionate about those. I was part of Andy Stone right mm-hmm. here in Greenwood. Mm-hmm. Helped me get started with this. And he and I and Bill Server and I'm going to miss his name down at South Carolina State. But we and Clemson, South Carolina State, and USC had a grant called Project Access. We went out into the rural areas and we did workshops for kids in those areas on a Saturday morning. With a role model, it worked, and, you know, we got students motivated.
So do we need to apply that in all aspects of teaching?
Well, what we need to do in the rural areas is we need to give incentives to teachers, good teachers, to go there. And that could be travel. That could be more salary. That could be a subsistence. Or whatever they need to get there. But we need to put the good teachers in the rural areas where the poor students are in order to bring them up. But they don't need a new building. They don't need a new computer. They need a good teacher.
What do you think overall of the teachers in South Carolina? I realize that's a very broad-based question.
Yeah, I love them. I teach them online at USC, graduate courses. I work with them, with the students that I work with all the time. They inspire me. If you walk into a elementary school teacher's, you know that that's one of the most exciting places you'll ever be. They are innovative. I don't know how they put all that stuff together and keep everything in order, but the ones I've been in have just been ideal. And, you know, it's a thrill to work with the teachers of the state of South Carolina.
What are they lacking? What do you think that teachers need to be motivated and to be inspired? And, you know, as far as what, you know, everybody says teachers need to teach.
Right.
I mean, this is what they say. But then again, they do have to have guidelines to work within, and we do have to have standards to work to. We haven't really talked about Common Core, but before we had Common Core, we did have standards here in South Carolina.
Yes, we did, and Barbara Nielsen did it right. And she was superintendent from 92 to 98, I believe it was, two terms. And she involved the entire state in developing the guidelines. And she divided the state up into eight districts. I was part of this, and we met, and we met, and we met. Everybody had time to input. And that is the way it should be done, and that's what I intend to do as superintendent if I'm there. A couple of things about what the teachers need and what we need in the standards. I've already mentioned that we have to have a program, a curriculum for computer science and engineering. You can't just give a student a laptop and claim they're a computer scientist. That's like saying, because I got a stove, I'm a chef. That's not true. So you got to have something.
Come on now, Don. Don't take away from putting a pot on the stove, put some boiling water, and throwing some soup in there. Come on now.
Well, we might want to know when that water boils.
Yeah, well, we might. Okay, go ahead.
But, you know, it's the kind of thing that, you know, you got to have a program to get these students that are tickling their toes and get them interested in you know, maybe even how to build the technology. We don't need every student doesn't need to go to college. So we need to think about the two tracks. We maybe even think about, you know, how are we going to have our diploma system? And you're going to have Elizabeth here in a little bit, and she's got a great idea about having two different diplomas, one for the tech and one for the college bound. And, you know, students in the technical field, they make fairly good salaries. I mean, we're not talking about a bad life. We're talking about a good life for them.
Well, and you know, it's very and a lot of them that are going into this, they are very technology oriented. I mean, mm-hmm. building cars or building motors or any of these things are based on a whole lot of technology.
It is. Back to the guidelines. Let me just tell you, you know what's happening this Saturday. We've got a horse that might be a Triple Crown winner,
mm-hmm.
and they run furlongs.
Right.
And a furlong is 220 yards. Which is 660 feet. Now, the mile is 5,280 feet.
Right.
So if you're in the audience out there, we'll get your pencil and paper out. Take 5,280 and divide it by 660. And all y'all yell out to me what you got. So now I'll have to go back and sort of figure that out myself. If 5,280 divided by 660, that's 8. So what's going on here? Well, when I was in the first grade, the teacher told me there was 5,280 feet in a mile. And I said, that can't happen. And I didn't know at the time, but the Roman mile was 5,000 feet. If the teacher had told me that the Roman mile, the mile was 5,000 feet, I'd have been satisfied. But here I am with this with weird number, and I know my parents told me that, you know, the cows fall out of the sky, the babies. I milked a cow when I was young. And, of course, when I had a calf, I'd look up in the sky and see if the baby would fall. So here I am in the first grade, and the teacher's telling me it's 5,280 feet.
You need a lot of help.
And, yeah. And so here's what happened. The Roman mile was 5,000 feet. And so the one we use is 5,280.
Right.
So if you divide 660 into 5,280, you get 8. So that means that the mile would be 8 furlongs.
Okay.
And so Queen Elizabeth in her backyard said, "Dear Henry, don't you think it would be a great idea if we add 280 feet to the Roman mile? Hence, it will be 8 furlongs on a whim." So nanotechnology is jostling to be taught in the 7th grade. And it is being taught. And nanotechnology is from 10 to the minus 7 meters to 10 to the minus 9 meters, not feet. We have to change our measurement system and while we're teaching it. And the teachers in the state of South Carolina have to have some retooling on how to teach measurement. I teach elementary teachers now, and I understand the problem. I know how to get that done. But that will enhance us all the way through in the new guidelines, because the chemistry teacher has to stop and teach metric before she can teach chemistry. Chemistry is 100% metric. You can't go to college without chemistry.
Well, there you go. Hey, we are here with Don Jordan, and I'm Ann Eller. Let's hear a quick word from our sponsors, and we'll be right back.
McDonald's presents Confessions of an Ex-Hipster.
I loved cappuccinos, so I put on an itchy turtleneck and grew a goatee. But before I knew it, I was into French films, indie rock, and not bathing. Luckily, I got help from McDonald's McCafe cappuccinos. Now I'm watching football, wearing khakis, even high-fiving again. Thank you, McDonald's.
New McCafe mochas, lattes, and cappuccinos from McDonald's. With fresh ground espresso and real steamed milk, it's all the coffee, hold the attitude. At participating McDonald's.
Visit your local McDonald's in Greenwood and Abbeville today.
Hey, I'm Ann Eller right here on WCRS. I hope you're enjoying... Gracie! Hey, Grace. I hope you're enjoying our interview with Don Jordan here. You know, Don, I was just telling you about Faye Sprouse, who is the superintendent of schools up there in, I think it's District 51, Ware Shoals.
Mm-hmm.
They have a blue ribbon. They just got a blue ribbon for their elementary school, and they got a bronze, I don't know if it's a star or a bronze ribbon for their high school. One of the things that Faye is passionate about is the enthusiasm, and they don't have a lot of money up there. In fact, she went to county council and told them, please get us jobs. Don't worry about giving us any more money.
Isn't that wonderful?
Yes.
That's exactly what we need. And that school is one I'd want to visit that, and with that superintendent also, to find out what's going on there that's right. Because, as you said, they don't have the money that some of the other districts, even in this county, mm-hmm. has. And so that's the kind of idea why I wanted to go visit every single school district in the state of South Carolina my first year in office, if I'm lucky enough to win, or unlucky enough to win, as I kept saying.
Yeah.
But, you know, my hat's off. And right now I'm just jumping on my toes to try to go see if I can talk to this superintendent, because that is ideal. And, you know, a lot of counties are that way. They need jobs for their students.
Sure. Well, then they need jobs to increase the property values of their area.
You know, that's one of the things I think Governor Haley's done well.
She has.
As she has provided jobs Boeing, and it goes on and on and on. And she has that in the foremost in front of her at all times.
Yes, she does. And we certainly have benefited. We've got Colgate coming here. We've got things coming. Of course, we can always use more. One of the things that we do have, which is a really good, is our technical schools, and we have Lander University here. But the bridge programs, we have kids that are graduating. Actually, we've had some that have graduated from Piedmont Tech Technical College, right, before they've actually gotten their high school diploma.
Yeah, that's a great idea, and I want to take off on that. You know, I'm for tuition stop and increase. So how do you get that done? So what, you know, and I'm glad to hear about the things here in Greenwood. In Beaufort County, for example, they've got a school called Wales Branch High School, early college. Students graduate there with a diploma, 60 hours of college credit, associate degree. They're going to Clemson. They're going to Francis Marion. They're going to the Citadel. And they have cut their tuition in half. And that is a program I understand is done by some of the charter schools, too, around the state. But, you know, we've got to change the attitude of the parent and the student to not go in debt for a college education. So we need to embrace the community colleges. It may cost you $2,000 to go to a community college, or it may cost you $10,000 to go to the big school. Why not go to the small school for 2 years and save the money, not go quite as much in debt? And then let's look for some attributes for those students that want to go into medicine and some of the sciences and the social works where we need them so bad, and let's make sure that we help them with their tuition after they've gotten in debt.
Yeah, there you go. I think that's an excellent idea. Well, we've talked some about tuition. We've talked about Grace, please go sit down. Please, lay down, Grace. I'm sorry, folks. You know, Grace, sometimes she gets a little passionate about what people are talking about on the radio.
She doesn't want the tuition increase.
No, she doesn't want the tuition increase. So she'd like to go to college herself. Absolutely right. So, Gracie, I guess I'll be quiet now that you've made that point. What other things, though, as a superintendent of education, do you feel are really, really important? We've got a few minutes left here to talk.
Well, we need the teachers involved in scheduling of their classes. We need professional development for them. We need to involve them in the decision-making process. And give me just an example. If you're teaching, say, an elementary or a middle school or wherever, a high school, and you have no input into your schedule, and your schedule is so tight that you really can't go to the bathroom, I mean, that's not right. And that is one of the reasons, because the teachers aren't involved, is one of the reasons we lose $5,000 a year in the state of South Carolina. So we need to talk to the principals and talk to the administrators and make sure that the teachers involved in the scheduling and it's not so tight they don't have any. And include them in getting together after school. You know, have a bowling club. Have a way for the teachers to bond together. And I think that's important, very important, to look at what the schedule is for the teacher, what they have to go through in a day, and make sure they got some free time to help with scheduling, sometimes maybe even some help with their clerical work, and treat them as professionals.
Now, I believe, that we need to increase the pay to our teachers.
Yes.
Yes. How do you, on the flip side, how do you grade teachers? In the business world, you either succeed or fail. You do the job that your boss wants or you're out. And how do you do that in a school system?
Well, first of all, the teachers have a three-year, if I have anything, and I think this exists also now, you got to have 3 years of trial. In other words, you just don't get in there and you get settled all of a sudden. You got some serious evaluation going on in the first 3 years. After that, you need a plan that uplifts the teacher, shows them what they're doing good, and, you know, it keep them in the classroom if they're good. If you've gone through the three-year trial, heck, you know, you've had time to evaluate. So now is the time to give them a thrill, show how much you appreciate them.
What should we do about the pay as it's based in South Carolina now?
Well, pay for teachers isn't as bad as it may seem. Everybody has to have the increment. Mm-hmm. That's what state workers get. And so you want that to continue. They are based on seniority. The pay is based on seniority. I think that's good. The longer you work, the more you get paid. They're based on how qualified they are. If they've got 30 extra hours after a bachelor's degree, they get more. If they got a doctor's degree, they get more. Mm-hmm. And, you know, they're required to go get, I think, 6 hours every 5 years. And they can count that towards that 30 hours. And once they get to that, you know, the pay goes up. So, and, you know, being a teacher, and if I were trying to recruit teachers, I would tell them the truth. You know, it's a pretty good deal. You're gonna work very hard, and you're gonna be taking a lot of work home with you. You're not gonna be working an 8-hour day. You're gonna be working a 10 or 12-hour day because you got a lot to do for the next day. But then there's Christmas, and you get some time off. Mm-hmm. And then there's summer, and you get some time off to go back and go back to school and, you know, keep up with the times and that kind of stuff. And you know, a lot of the industry, you do not have that kind of time off.
Well, so, I haven't had a day off in forever.
And, you know, I sort of feel that way at the university. As I said, I taught 2 courses this morning before I got here, and, you know, I'll be teaching most of the summer. And but that's because, you know, I got to make house payments and that kind of stuff. But
we got to
be competitive. We got to watch what the other states are doing. We got to be competitive. We don't want to lose that competitive edge.
Absolutely.
And, you know, even back to the tuition thing, it's a lot cheaper to go to Georgia and North Carolina than South Carolina.
Absolutely. Well, Don Jordan, I have enjoyed talking with you. I'm going to give you 2 minutes to tell our listeners why they should vote for you on Tuesday, June 10th.
Well, the reason that I'm running is because I want to stop tuition growth in South Carolina. And I feel like if we don't stop that, then in 10 years from now, we're going to have a real crisis. And it's a sin, in my opinion, to allow this to continue on without anybody, you know, asking what we can do to turn this around. And that means that the colleges are going to have to say, if I do this, it's going to increase my tuition. Don't do it. And the legislature is going to have to quit going down. They've gone down from 15%. I think when I was there, it was 65. When I was going to school, it was 65%. They've gone down to 9% now. They need to step that up a little bit to sort of control this tuition. I think we can get that done. If the teachers are listening, you need to vote for me because I'm for a teacher-oriented. And if you're a student and you're a parent, you need to vote for me because I'm a student guy all the way. Students are my number one priority. And I've run programs for 3 decades for students. And I know how to go into the rural areas and do programs that will motivate the students. And I know how to go in and evaluate things.
This is WCRS right here in Greenwood. Go ahead, Don. Sorry.
Well, you know, and I'm the only one that's really talking about what you need to do in the fourth grade to get the so we don't have to outsource our jobs. We need computer science in the fourth grade. We need engineering. And we need to change the way measurement is taught. And as I alluded before, you know, the world is all metric. And since nanotech.
Except for the United States.
Well, United States is 40% metric. We don't know it, but you know, you lose fat grams, fat ounces, you lose fat grams. Your liter Coke, you know, the babies are 3 kilograms to 4 kilograms. Their height is 52 centimeters. You know, it's all around us. Your car is a 4.0 liter engine, and that means the 4 cylinders or the 6 cylinders you got, the amount of this displacement in that cylinder constitutes 4 liters. So it's all around us, and it's no turning around to go back the other way. But right now, with nanotechnology, what it's doing and its importance, we need to retrain the teachers, especially in the K-5, how to teach measurement.
All right. Well, and do you have a website?
I do. And it's Jordan for Soup, and that soup is spelled SUPE.com. WWW, of course, Jordan for Soup. So if you're hungry, go get some soup.
Yes, right. All right. Well, Don, I wish you all the best on Tuesday. Thanks so much for being our very special guest right here on WCRS today.
And thank you very much. It has been a pleasure. You are good.
Thank you very much. This is WCRS. I'm going to take a few-minute break, and Elizabeth Moffley, I do believe, is in the building and will be right back. Don't you go away.